Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another amazing guest. Right now, you can find him at the Nederlander Theater making his Broadway debut as a swing in the Who's Tommy. But before that, he was a swing in Pounceville on the U.S. National Tour 6 of Cats before the pandemic. So welcome, Brett Michael Ockley, and thank you for joining me.
Hello.
I'm excited. You were in this like weird set of the Tour 6 where it was before the pandemic. It ended so abruptly because it's kind of, you know, the world shut down. So it's always kind of fun to hear a little bit about the experience because it was also during like the peak of the revival happening and the movie chaos and all that stuff happening all at once. So we're going to start there, and I cannot wait to talk to you about Tommy too, because I saw it and loved it and it'll be a really fun conversation. But take me to the beginning of your Cats history, because I'm always fascinated by, is it something you grew up with, the 1998 movie? Did you dance it growing up, or how were you introduced to the musical?
Right. So I think if I recall correctly, I definitely remember seeing the movie as a kid. Now, like, I don't think I was, obsessed with it. And I don't think I even actually had the VHS of it at home. I think I saw it on TV. And that's what I remember. It wasn't until I got a bit older and I kind of started to hinting at wanting to do musical theater that people were like, oh my gosh, do you know Cats? Like, you should do Cats, because a lot of my background was in dance. Mm-hmm. Which was very like cool, but I was like, well, I don't really know that much about Cats. But I was like, if it's something you think I should do, let me, you know, get into it and look into it. And then the Broadway revival happened, and I remember actually winning the lottery, the Broadway lottery. I'm a big lottery player. Like that
same.
Is
same.
I go hard for the lottery, and I'm like, people are like, Brett, you have somebody on the inside. I'm like, I promise I don't. I'm consistent, and I'm like, I'm going to win. And I saw it for the first time and I was just like blown away. I think I definitely was much older than I was when I saw it the first time. So a lot of it was not still in my brain. I had a rough idea. And I can tell you this, I think I was sitting on the end of the aisle and when all the cats come down in green eyes, of course, as most people, I was definitely scared and like, what is going on? But it was awesome. Like I was like, wow. And I definitely felt like I was like, these people are dancing for their lives.
Yeah.
And I ended up, funnily enough, seeing the show twice more while it was on Broadway. Another friend of mine had gotten two tickets and was like, hey, do you want to come? And I was like, sure. And I sat in in the mezzanine, and it was a very different experience than when I had sat in the orchestra the first time. I thought it was just so awesome. And I got the opportunity to audition, and as a replacement on the tour, it was one that kind of like about 6 months in after the tour had started. And I was so excited, and I was actually doing another contract at the time. And I basically went from one contract right to Cats.
Wow.
And it was crazy. Cause I was like, wow, I'm going from dancing a lot in one show to dancing a whole lot in another show.
Yeah.
But it was so awesome. And just to be engulfed in this story and this thing that has such a crazy following, you know, that people just love and adore it. And to get into it, you gain such a different appreciation for it. And people are like, oh my gosh, do you like love Cats? And I was like, you know, it's interesting. Like, I really didn't have any kind of feelings about it per se when I first knew about it. But once I got in it, I gained such a different perspective and appreciation for it. And I was like, there's so much in there that to, I guess I would say to the outside eye, you might not realize. But as soon as you get in it, you learn so much about, you know, the little things and how intricate and how weave these details. And the story really is quite universal, you know, when you take a step back and really look at a lot of the different things that are happening.
Yeah. It's so similar to my experience just without being in it, because I'm the same way. And I laugh at you saying like someone had an extra ticket and was just like, do you want to go see Cats? It's like how I saw it the second time. And it wasn't like I was, oh, I got to go rush to see it again. Yeah. I saw it the first time in a preview. And then I saw it again when someone offered me, hey, I'm going, do you want to come? And it is true. Like as I started and did not know much about it and didn't think much about it and just kind of made some jokes early on after first seeing it. And as I've started doing the show and, you know, 100 and whatever, 60 episodes in, now it's like I have learned everything and a lot. And you're right. There's just so much more to it that whenever I talk to people who don't know the show or just know basically what it is, they say the same thing. I'm like, oh, yeah, Cats. I know what that is. And it's like, but no, but you don't realize it goes deep. Like, let me tell you a little bit about what's happening here.
No, absolutely. Which is, yeah. So it was just like incredible. And I was actually preparing to leave the show. But I was on my last, what I guess, 2 weeks, I think. And that is when the pandemic shut everything down. Wow. And we were in Ottawa in Canada. And I remember finishing the show and us kind of feeling a little uncertain. There was this feeling in the air that potentially like that Thursday night was going to be our last show. No, it wasn't said officially, nothing, but you know, we had found out during a rehearsal that day that Broadway had shut down and that Broadway wasn't doing performances that night. Mm-hmm. And so everybody was like, well, are we doing a show tonight? Are we doing a show tonight? And everyone there was like, yes, we are definitely doing a show. We're definitely doing a show. I remember, you know, obviously, you probably know this, but obviously there's Green Eyes and a couple other times that the Cats go into the house, into the audience.
Yeah.
And I actually, because of everything that was going on, I was an advocate about being like, can we figure out a way around that right now? Because we don't really know what this whole thing is and how it can be passed or if people have it and anything. And I was like, I know I would feel safer if I just did it. I think Pounceville is one of those cats that goes out more than anyone else, just like by chance. I think it's like one more time than the next cat.
But yeah.
I was definitely an advocate of being like, can we not go into the house? And that night we didn't. But it just, and then we got an email the next day that was saying that we were not going to continue our performances for the rest of the weekend in Ottawa and to kind of wait to see what the situation was.
Yeah.
And they had even told us that they were, the next city that we were supposed to go to had canceled our engagement because of the pandemic. And so they were saying we might potentially send you all to the city following that and you guys would just have a, you know, a week off in that city and then we'd resume performances. And then quickly things spiraled in different directions.
2 weeks. It's going to be 2 weeks. It's really interesting. I didn't realize that you all didn't do Green Eyes or the in the audience Green Eyes that last performance, because that's something that, you know, was such a interesting part of the show leading into it and then has not been back, at least in the U.S. I know in other performances they've done this in other parts of the world, they've brought that back now. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. last tour, they didn't go in the audience at all still. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know that that's an interesting piece, because I saw the week before the world shut down, the pandemic, I saw Diana. And it was kind of the same thing. I was like, this feels like a lot of people, you know, like we weren't really sure. And so to be performing and kind of on the road and the uncertainty of that, like you knew something was happening, but you just didn't know what extent. And
yeah,
I wonder how abrupt was it? Like you said that you kind of had a feeling it might be your last performance, but didn't know, like, did you go on stage that night thinking this is probably the last time I'm going to get to do this? Or was it I think we're going to be good. Like how much of that was in your thoughts?
I thought it was my last time, if I'm being 100% honest. And, you know, even talking to some of my cast members afterwards, and our wardrobe supervisor sat in the wings and watched the ball. And he was like, yeah, people were dancing it as if it was potentially the last time they would ever dance it. And I think it's funny. I think as a performer, you know, people tell you that you should dance every show like it's your last, but you know what the difference is when you know that you are never going to do something again. And I also think that you kind of put your, I think you push your body to a limit that maybe you don't typically push it to, because you know that you might not have to get up the next day and deal with those repercussions, or like, you know what I mean, the soreness or the exhaustion of it all. And so you just go all the way. And I think that everyone was just like pouring their hearts out. It just felt different than I think I've ever felt the ball feel. And it was a different experience, you know? And I think, there, like I said, there was no like, for sure, this is going to be it. But we could just, being on a tour and knowing that Broadway had shut down, it was like, oh, well, there's no way that we're going to be able to continue to do this. And obviously there's different, they're completely different things in terms of, we have presenters at these different theaters that we're going to, and they ultimately, them and our producers decide if the show goes on or not. But we just couldn't see how it would go. And as you said, it was kind of, we weren't sure of the severity of the situation. And I think that, and especially not being in the US at the time, and not that Canada is that far away, but you know, we were a little removed from kind of the realities of the craziness. You know, I remember going to a store in Canada after hearing about everything that was happening in the US and being like, well, let me see if I should get some toilet paper here.
Yeah.
And because I was hearing about there was no toilet paper in the US grocery stores. And so I literally went to one, and there, I think I went to a drugstore there. There was no toilet paper. And I was like, okay, maybe this is really affecting everybody. Like this is something I should actually be really taking seriously.
Yeah. And I'm sure you finish and you come back, you get back home, and it's like there was a period of like, oh, is this going to be short or is this going to end? Cause I still have, I have them actually. I think I have them right here. I have them right in front of me. I have the tickets from, you were supposed to come to Broadway in Indianapolis.
Yep.
And, I have the two tickets that my mom was going to go, and this was going to be your tour, coming through in April. And so
what's the date on that? Because I think I actually have a slightly funny story about that.
This is, I think you were going to do a week at Clues Memorial Hall, which is Butler University. And this was going to be on April 4th of 2020. This was for the Saturday night show.
So that was my last
tickets.
This was going to be your last week. My last week. That was it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I remember because I had already had this show started. The podcast had started. And so I was kind of jokingly debating, do I fly back to Indiana to go see it, you know, with my family? And she has these two tickets. And then I ended up getting stuck in Indiana anyways. And
wow,
they're the printed, you know, it's like now you don't even get printed tickets. It's like, this is a little bit. So I have them. I took them last time I was home. I brought them back with me as like a unique cat's souvenir. But that would have been your last show. That's crazy.
Yeah. That was like, for sure, my last city was Indianapolis. That's why I was like, when you said Indianapolis, I was like, wait, that feels like oddly familiar for some, you know, strong reason. And yeah, that was going to be my last city.
Small world, very small world. Okay. I want to go back to a little bit about your characters, because I know you joined as a replacement. So you go through a different rehearsal process and process of like learning the backstory. So you came in as a swing, and I think you covered Pounceville, and then you pretty quickly became Pounceville and covered Mungo Jerry and Skimbleshanks.
Yeah.
How do, as a replacement, how do they do kind of the cat's Bible for you with the, here's the backstory of what you need to know, but also learn it because we're going to throw you in pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think my process was a little quick, but they did definitely still go through, you know, they have like three words for each cat to kind of describe each of them. Please don't ask me my three words. It's been many years.
I think they're all posted online somewhere at this point.
Yeah, so I'm sure. Find them. But yeah, they go through that. Of course, the full story, kind of like, you know, checking what I know and like kind of what I thought. And then they kind of nicely correct you and kind of not correct you, but just kind of tell you kind of the vantage point from, I guess, from the cast, if that makes sense, and kind of what you should know to be able to tell the story the way that it is being presented. And after that, I was kind of thrown in. Of course, obviously I knew that Pounce was a kitten and is one of the kittens that kind of is together with, Tumblebrutus and, Scylla for most of the show. Mm-hmm. Honestly, they're like the three in that revival story. Cause I think in the revival, there may have been a couple other small kittens that were also in the show, but I think they got maybe a little cut for the tour. And just kind of talking about who you were kind of looking at and looking up to, and then also being able to recognize who, what I consider the teenage cats, which are kind of like Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer, who are a little older, but not terribly older. And then obviously you have like Gus, who is an elder cat, as I like to call him. And also like your Jenny Anydads and your Jelly Lorum, who are kind of your mother figure, aunt figure, I like to call them cats as well. And just kind of breaking down all that so that you understand also your relationship to each of the cats, especially as a kitten, because I think that that is where it becomes important.
Yeah. So Pouncival's words were adolescent, inquisitive, and alert.
Yes.
According to the internets, which has everything put on.
About right.
So I want to ask another question, because I love hearing a little bit about with your all's tour. You were performing when the chaos of the 2019 movie came out.
Yes.
And so how did that like impact a little bit about your all's, not just performance, like I'm assuming y'all went to go see it, but the whole vibe around Cats as a show was very different. And you're going around the country, around, I guess, North America too, in Canada, and performing this. And there's a different level of like knowledge right now because of that, everything that happened with that movie. So what was your experience like with that?
I wonder if anyone, I think I listened to Rose when she was on here. And I don't know if she said this, but they invited us, kind of our company management invited us all to go on Christmas Day to see it. We were in Toronto at the time. And so a big group of us went to go see it. And I think, honestly, I did not really know what to expect. I can be honest, though, and say that I was a little apprehensive, especially seeing the trailer and just taken aback a little bit by how everyone looked.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the problems with this movie.
And another interesting thing, and hopefully who knows if I should say all these things, but I think it's fine, is I was told that Andrew Lloyd Webber's music team was not also consulted or really used in terms of the movie as well, which was also a very interesting thing to hear going into it, because I feel like Andrew Lloyd Webber is really like what is the pillar of Cats, if you ask me, you know what I mean? Like the music is what is Cats. There is no book really to the show. So to hear that they kind of were not involved in the movie, it was one of two things. It was either a red flag that they didn't want to be involved, or it was concerning because you were like, well, then who is taking over? Like, who is at the helm of the music? And what is their experience with this show, this iconic show that has such a history, you know? And so then what are they doing with it that they don't feel like they need kind of these people that stand at the forefront and the pillars of this. And then I saw it, and I'm going to be honest, I was kind of shocked. I'll start with what I think was effective and what I really did enjoy. And that was the perspective of using Victoria as kind of like the new cat.
Yep,
and her kind of getting thrown into it, and then everything being from her perspective. I thought that was the strongest thing that they could have done, and the strongest choice. I was like, oh, this is really good, you know, because how do we discover all of this if we don't, whose perspective are we discovering it from? And that makes total sense to me. But I think I couldn't get past, you know, the snot on Jennifer Hudson's nose while she's belting out, you know, and that amongst many other things, the hands. Yeah. The ring on Judi Dench.
You mentioned the who was involved and not involved. I don't have any back like knowledge on this, but my hunch is that I think that they all went in with really good intentions and were all involved. And then as they got through it and started putting it together, I think some of the people probably realized this wasn't the vision that they probably set out to do. And I would assume that there's just probably some egos in the room, I'm not sure who and who was involved, but they probably had somebody take over. It sounds like it was a little messy just from even an editing perspective and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So people started distancing themselves very quickly from the movie. and people that I don't think probably would normally have. I think it's just like, it ended up not what they set out to do. And it's unfortunate because I, to this day, like, I agree with you. I thought the Victoria angle was really smart because in a movie, you need some storytelling that kind of lacks in Cats, not because it's not there, but because it's not presented there. Like, you know, you said he's Andrew Lover's a pillar. It's music and dance. And that is incredible live. And it doesn't always translate on film. And so they added that layer, which I thought was smart. I still firmly believe that if you took all the footage that was filmed, everything that's out there, whatever they collected, there is a good movie there that you could edit. If you just edit it differently, because I look back at all the dancers they had. They had some incredible dancers.
Yes.
They had some incredible singers. And I couldn't see any of it because it just jumped around so much and it moved around so much. And some of the stuff that was, I don't think meant to be a joke, was so ridiculous. It became a joke. There are probably ways to recut that film and make it pretty good, or at least a better version of Cats than what we got. So it's interesting to hear because you all got to see it. You were living, you know, like in that moment, you could not have been more. I thought I was closely tied to it because I was, sitting in front of a microphone talking about Cats, but you all were performing it 8 times a week and having to have the audience come in, sometimes only knowing it from what they had heard on the news or saw from all the social media storm of that.
Yeah, I think I definitely was. I remember being in it and like reminding people, I'm like, this is not the movie. Like, you know, like this is not, do not expect to see or experience what you experience, you know, in the movie. I also think I remember something around that time people were talking about that they kind of rushed the process as well. And I think that there, for a movie like that, that one has so much editing and CGI and all of that, you absolutely do not want to rush it. And it would be, to me, the equivalent of rushing a movie like Planet of the Apes, where like that could be the worst thing you could possibly do, because what happens is it becomes a joke. And as you said, it's becomes stuff that's not meant to be funny, becomes funny because people are purely laughing at the visually it looks funny, you know?
Yeah.
And not being able to actually go on the ride of the story. Because as we talked about, there is a story there, you know, and adding this new angle really allows the plot to I think the plot to sink into people's minds in a more digestible way. And I think an easier way to kind of comprehend, but all these kind of weird, funny distractions.
Yeah.
Then take away from the work that you've done to kind of increase, I guess I should say, push the plot forward, if that makes sense, or perspective plot, I guess I should say.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think I don't think it was meant to be. I mean, they put so much money into it. It was a $100 million budget. It was meant to be something. I think they thought, like, maybe with Les Mis and some of the other ones that have come out, I think the same director did it, that this could be a big way to boost not just the musical, but theater and kind of put this on screen. And then it didn't finish. Like, the edited version, what you all saw and what I saw before the original release wasn't finished. I mean, it was mostly finished, but that's why you saw the hand and it was kind of rushed, and it was very surprising because it wasn't like this was a small little indie film where they were doing it at the end, you know, just kind of like as a school project. Like, this had a humongous budget and a lot of people, like a lot of very talented people involved that it should not have ended the way it did. And I'm still hoping there's a revival of it at some point. Like, there's got to be a resurgence of this movie. It's on Netflix right now, so I'm wondering if it's going to start picking up some steam because of that, but it had its day. We're gonna take a quick break and then we'll be back for more of The Wrong Cat Died. I want to talk about Tommy. I want to pivot to Tommy. I saw it this week. I loved it. It is an incredible show and mesmerizing, and it is your Broadway debut, correct?
Yes.
Congratulations. Yes. So tell a little bit about, like, we'll get into the Cats and Tommy parallel, but if you're explaining this to somebody, I think a lot of people know, you know, it's The Who. It's called The Who's Tommy. But what are audiences gonna get when they come to the Nederlander Theater?
So I think it's very important to that people know that it is absolutely based off of The Who's album Tommy that came out in the '60s. And there was the original Broadway musical was in 1993. And if you love the Who, I'm like, you'll love it without yes. question or doubt. You know what I mean? Like that is going to be the audience that I barely have to sell it to. But I think the other audiences, I always have to figure out what is the best angle kind of to approach it, right? And it just depends on what I think that people are interested in. Because I think that the story is a really cool story. And I also tell people it is a rock opera to an extent. Mm-hmm. But I think that one of the coolest things that I like about the show is I think when the musical came out in 1993, it had a kind of a sound that was of the time. And I think that what they've been able to do with this revival is to maintain the rock feeling and sound, but take out what could have dated it.
Yeah.
And so it's not so synthy, you know, but the sounds and the melodies are all completely there, you know, and the right instruments are still being used to keep that rock feeling, but it doesn't feel dated at all, you know?
Yeah.
And which is what I think I love, because like I can be honest and say that knowing that I was even in going into the auditioning process, I was like, well, I fit into a rock musical, you know? And I've done a lot of different things I've obviously done Cats, which is Andrew Lloyd Webber. I've done Ain't Too Proud, which was The Temptations. Like mm-hmm. I've done so many different things in different kind of genres and styles. And I love that I got to tap into this. And it's another side of me that I didn't even know that I could fully access. But I love that. But obviously, let me rewind. I'm like going on a tangent. But yeah, it's just about a kid who experiences trauma in his childhood that causes him to lose his senses. He becomes deaf, dumb, and blind. And his parents are basically on this quest to figure out what is going on with him and mm-hmm. what has happened to him. And in this quest, they meet with so many different types of people to try to find some sort of cure or fix for this kind of situation. I try not to give too much away in terms of what happens and why he faces this trauma. Some people straight up tell it and they're like, they give kind of like what exactly happens. But I like that people don't know that when they're walking into the theater. And then eventually he's able to kind of break free from that. And then he becomes what we would consider nowadays, which I think this is also a change from the revival, more of like an influencer. And I think that is what also allows it to kind of transcend to today's audience is we see this person become an influencer and to kind of see the rise and fall of being an influencer, which is something that I don't think we are at a point now in 2024 that we're really talking about the rise. And we talk about the rise and kind of the height of influencers, but the fall is something that we're not quite ready to talk about yet. I think now we're seeing the things from the late 90s and early 2000s and kind of we're taking the rose colored glasses off of all of those things and seeing the reality of it. And I think in maybe like 10 to 15 years, we'll start to talk about what happens when influencers disappear, you know, or when like they kind of are no longer on their throne of influence.
Yeah. No, I think it's such an interesting take. I didn't know what I was going to walk into besides The Who, and I knew Pinball Wizard. I knew a lot of their music. So I knew kind of the sound I was getting. And I knew Pinball Wizard lyrics well enough that I was like, I think I have a general idea of what the story is going to be.
Right. Yeah.
Here's the stuff that really kind of blew me away. And that I think is, I didn't expect going in, but I was just like, it's some of the messages I sent to people after where I'm like, I don't know if this is a show that's on your radar, but it should be. And here's why. Yeah. And so one was, I mean, obviously the performances are incredible. I loved the mixing in the part of the Pinball Wizard, the part that most people know, that kind of intro, that it was infused in throughout. It was like the ensemble singing it at points. And it's kind of like, as someone who loves that song, I was like, wow, I got this song, like pieces of it in really unique ways. But you all dancing, you all are working. Like the choreography is incredible. And it's like going in knowing that I was going in more for a rock opera and music, I could not stop watching, especially the ensemble, y'all lifting and doing like the way you use the stage with the set and the different moving pieces and set design and the ensemble dancing, the choreography, that to me was so unbelievable that was where I sent some notes to people I know are really big dance enthusiasts, being like, you got to go see this rock opera for the dancing. Like, this is,
that's so
you
awesome.
All are working hard up there.
Yes. I was, I actually watched the show, I guess, not too long ago with the director, and someone that sat in front of us during the, like the curtain call turned around to him and said, this is probably one of the hardest working ensembles on Broadway. And I have to agree. As a swing in the show, I kind of know what a lot of these people do. And so I really truly do know like what each and every person is doing, and no one is chilling. Nobody's relaxing. Everyone is working their butts off, you know, 8 shows a week. And when you come and see the show, which, you know, people who are listening to this, I promise you, you will not be disappointed. I believe that Tommy is an experience. The Who's Tommy on Broadway is an experience. It's not just you go and watch a show. Even talking to the producers, they were talking about the sound design in the theater. And it is fully, you're engulfed in sound. They have put so many speakers into that theater. And I think that there is not a bad seat in the house for sound. You know, like, it does not matter. I was buying tickets for another show, and a couple behind me had seen the show the night before, and they said they sat like towards the back of the mezz, and they said they were blown away by the sound. And I was like, well, that's good to hear, because that means in the back, people are still having the experience that I'm talking about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It is definitely, it is rock. Like, it's loud. You can hear it the whole way through. And yet the work and the lifts and different things. I am curious. You all send those kids in some moments. Are they like, okay, they were puking up a storm at that show?
No, it's crazy. The kids are good. And it's funny because I think, you know, as an adult, I felt exactly what you said. I was like looking at the kids like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. And you know, they're just literally, you know, moving them around. But I think the kids actually, like, it's like a ride, you know, like they're like,
yeah,
they're just going for the journey. And they, and because of the, you know, the trauma that Tommy faces, they don't have to react or anything. So it's just like, just stand, you know, just stay and allow all this stuff to just kind of happen. But yeah, when people first came to see the show that I know, and they would come and talk to me, they were like, wow, those kids. And because the kids don't really sing until later in the show. Someone who had seen only like the first act, they were like, so what was the audition like? Do they just bring the kids in the room and just like throw them around?
I had the exact same thought. And then at intermission, I turned to my friend and I go, it's interesting that they're mic'd up. Are they going to sing later? Cause we had pretty good seats and I could see the mics on them.
Yeah.
And I was like, but they haven't said a word yet. Like, are they going to, I'm assuming they don't put a mic on you if you're not going to sing. So I was like, it's going to be coming. And then, yeah, they were amazing and fun to hear later. But I had the same reaction. But they deliver. I mean, they go straight face. I mean, like, they have to put on a performance in a very different way.
Exactly. And I think that is one of, I had a friend that literally came to see the show maybe 3 nights ago. And I was talking about how just the discipline of the kids, because to have, you know, kids who are 11 years old and under, right, kind of having to literally stand still and not react to anything on stage for, you know, a period of time is really not an easy thing to get kids who are very excited and, you know, kind of rambunctious and at an age where they're exploring and learning and growing, to have them be able to just kind of stay so focused and not react to all of these things, and also being pushed and pulled and thrown and everything. It's truly incredible, you know, and I am always in awe that they just have this kind of focus. And I just can't wait, especially to see what their future holds. Discipline is already something I think to commend. And it's incredible to watch. And just to see them, even from our first rehearsal to now, just to see them grow in something that seems probably so small, but it requires so much.
Yeah, it was a fun part of the show. I thought that just seeing them coming in and out frequently and delivering it. Like, I was, again, pretty close. And I kept thinking about, they probably have relatives in the audience. They've got to have friends and family there. Just, you know, their parents are there. And they've got to not see them and make any reaction. But, okay, I want to do, I love, one of my favorite things about having this show is being able to compare characters. So what I want to do is I want to go through some of the Tommy characters. And I want to say which cat would be the best one to play then based on the personalities. And I think these line up a lot easier than I thought they would. So I'm going to run through them. I have my answers, but I want to hear what you think. So
I am so excited. I am so excited to hear this because this is going to be very interesting. Cause I'm trying to think now and I'm like really, really trying to think really hard. And I think some of them are very obvious, but I'm excited to hear what you think.
I have rationales for all of them. I think there's only one that I kind of struggled with and one that I think is going to anger some people who have been on the show before. But let's start with Mrs. Walker.
Okay.
Who do you think?
Do I have to go first?
Oh, yeah, you got to go first because I want you to go first.
Okay, wow, that's hard. Okay, I'm going to say she could maybe be like a Jelly Lorem.
So I debated between Jelly Lorem and Jenny Any Dots.
Okay, that's where I was. Okay, I'm in the same spot.
Jenny just because I got more of the motherly, like really kind of in charge a lot of the show.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, okay, so we're on the same page there. Captain Walker.
That's hard. Okay, maybe Monk?
That's what I wrote down. I wrote Monka Strap.
Yeah, because I think Old Dude is definitely a strong no, you know, because I think because of Captain Walker's character, he has a little more fight and he's a little more like, it's very territorial, you know, of his child. And I think that is Monk. I think Monk is a lot more protective. I think Old Dude is a little too old for Captain Walker and just like not so active.
I agree. I picked Monk. I did think about Old Dude and I'm going to give a spoiler alert. So if you're listening to this, have not seen Tommy and don't want to spoil anything, just click the 15 second button. But the only reason I thought it could be Old Dude is because he does murder somebody. I'm like, you know what? Yeah. So does Old Dude. But okay. I went with Monka Strap. Okay. Spoiler alert's over. Let's go to Uncle Ernie.
This is the one that I think.
This one's going to get me in trouble.
Yeah, this is probably the hardest. Come on. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I feel like it could go wrong in so many ways. Maybe Bustopher?
Oh, I don't know. Think that. Okay. So I had two, but neither of them I think are right because I think it's a mix of both of these two, to be honest.
Okay.
I have always thought the uncle of cats is Skimbleshanks. And so that to me, he's always Uncle Skimble, but not this type of uncle. So I don't think that's where I'm like, I don't think Skimble is very likable. And I'm like, Uncle Ernie has some darkness to him. So I was like, maybe it's a combination of it's the Uncle Skimble, but McCavity. Or
yes. Okay.
Yeah. Some version. I was thinking like
maybe
that.
McCavity, but yeah, I think, okay. I get the Skimble uncle comparison. Cause I could totally see Skimble. Cause we used to say when we did Cats that Skimble and Jenny Any Dots were definitely your aunt and uncle.
Yeah.
That's what we used to say. So I could see that. Okay. I feel that.
But I know a lot of Skimbles. I've had a lot on the past and they're going to be mad once they know Uncle Ernie's backstory.
Yeah. I think that
they're probably not want to be compared to him because there is a little like creepy Uncle Skimble, but not really. I think it depends on just which way you take it. So we'll move on. We'll go to Cousin Kevin.
I think Cousin Kevin. So I would go quickly to Mungo.
Okay.
But I think you could also go to, could you go to McCavity?
I went to Tugger, but I think it was more of just like free-willing. I think Mungo fits in that same bucket of like kind of a, you know, has some fun in the beginning, but still really part of the family and kind of is taken care of. Mungo fits really well. That was the one I had a question mark next to.
Yeah, I think I see Tugger though. I totally see because Tugger is kind of like, he's a little bit of a rebel. You know what I mean? So like, he's definitely going to go against the grain. So I could definitely see Tugger, but I think Mungo might feel a little young that's not true. Where Kevin should be is probably Mungo, but I think because Bobby Conti, who plays Cousin Kevin in the show, is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
He is quite tall and quite clearly not a teenager, but plays the role so well as a teenager. I think that is probably what pushes you into like the Tugger world, like visually.
Yeah.
But I think like if you saw someone, you know, a little smaller or like just who maybe came across just visually younger, because I think that the way that Bobby plays it is exactly how it should be played. I think you might go with the Mungo kind of character.
It's funny because I only think about this from personality, but I hadn't thought about it from that angle, which is that there is probably some just even subconscious of like, oh, he's tall, so is Tugger, you know, like that type of
thing. Yeah.
All right, we got two left. What about the Acid Queen?
Okay, that's good. I'm going to say Bomb.
Oh, okay. I thought the same route, but I thought Grisabella. I think this is Grisabella's.
Okay.
This is her before she's coming back to the tribe.
No, why did I not? Yes. Okay. Wow, that's okay. Yeah, I didn't even think Grizz, just because I think Grizz, I just think of like such a, like a, I don't know how to explain it, just like in a world of her own. But I think, yeah, Grizz definitely does make sense because she's kind of like going through this kind of like withdrawal almost, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where the Acid Queen finds herself as well. So, you know what? I'm going to take it back, even though I do think there's a bit of Bomb in there.
Bomb and Grizz, they have very similar, they could, you know, Bomb could go towards Grizz's.
She's like, there's exactly, definitely Bomb is like the Grizz, is, she's making her way to the Grizz.
Yeah. Okay, last one. And I thought this one, it came to me right away, but Tommy.
Misto?
Oh, so I went Demeter. I think it's got a very interesting Demeter, similar trauma background, skittish, a little off, not fully there, but everyone's rooting for, you know, you to get over it. So that was where I kind of thought.
Okay, I can see that. I'm gonna tell you the only reason that I came up with Misto, and I think that this could be argued, I could be argued out of it easily. So I'm not even gonna like go too hard on it. But I think just because Misto kind of starts to show with not quite being the fully realized version of himself. And I think that Tommy goes through kind of that transformation of kind of not really being in himself. And then fully, once he becomes free, he becomes fully himself and then takes on a whole new responsibility as a person in this story. And is then looked up to as someone who is going to, in my opinion, in the show, save the day.
Yeah. Okay. And I like that. Yeah. I think that's very true. You went more character art and I went more personality style.
Yeah.
I completely agree with that. I think that that is a, you know, I don't always think about Misto's beginning. I always think about just the number and like the very proud and that moment.
I think that goes back to like what we talked to earlier, where I was like, I think being like fully in it and being so aware of what each cat does and how they interact with one another, I think I can kind of like, I am able to dissect that those arcs of each character, because I do believe each character has one, even though with all the cats on stage, almost the entire show, it can be impossible to figure out each person's kind of tracking to their moment, if that makes sense.
Yeah. This is, I love this. I think it's so fun to compare the shows and also just getting to talk a little bit more about Tommy. So I think Nederlander Theater in, it's running now. I'll link the box office, but yeah, come see the show.
Yes, come see the show. I promise you will not be disappointed. It is, as I said earlier, it is an experience more than anything. And I think you won't come in thinking that you're just going to see a musical. It is so much more than a musical. It's a spectacle, but it also has a story that has heart and characters that have true stories to be told. And I think that that is something really special.
Yeah, you'll have a good time for sure. Okay, let's do some rapid fire to get to the $1 million question, but before that, if you could go on for one night for cats, any cat, male, female, doesn't matter, who would you want to perform as?
Okay, I'm going to say Bomb.
Wow, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, I've always been jealous of McCavity. I think McCavity is one of the fiercest numbers. It's that act two kind of like wake up, we're here number.
Yeah.
And I think Bomb has just a strong presence in that number, and I just... Yeah, Bomb.
I couldn't agree more. Just own it. Own the stage right there.
Yeah.
Favorite and least favorite cat, character-wise?
Favorite? That's tricky. I was a Mungo cover, and I love Mungo. I just think you get to have so much fun.
Yeah, for sure.
And I will say that, and I think I'm probably biased. It was a struggle between Mungo and Skimble, but I think Mungo.
Okay.
Least favorite. Now this feels shady. That's so tricky. This might get me in some trouble. I'm gonna say Gus.
Oh no, that's not good for my last question. Okay, I won't press further. Favorite song in the show?
Gimbleshanks, without a doubt, no question. That's the easiest thing I could answer. And I'll tell you exactly why. The start of the song sounds like Jingle Bells, which makes you think of Christmas, which typically for most people has a good nostalgia.
Yeah, no arguments. Okay, my fun one. I always ask one fun one. Who do you think would be the best pinball player?
I'm going to say Rum Tum Tugger.
Ooh, Tugger. I was going to say Mistopheles. I think same.
That's so true. Oh, yeah. I should have said that.
I almost said it when we were talking about Mistopheles being Tommy. I was like, oh, yeah, he's going to be a great pinball player. And I was like, wait, nope. I got this question for you, so I got to save
that's
it.
That's so cool. Could you imagine, like, another where Mr. Mistopheles is actually, like, is Tommy? That's actually a kind of brilliant mashup of, like, him just, like, throwing energy into the machine. And
yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Crossover.
You got to be coming up with some great ideas. You might...
If you need to start making some TikTok or some Instagram reels or whatever with, you know, backstage and throw in a little Mistopheles into it.
A little Mistopheles at the pinball machine. Okay,
last question, most important one. I've argued at length that I don't think Grizzabelle is the right jokal choice. You just said Gus was your least favorite cat, so not optimistic here, but if you, Rhett, you're choosing your jokal choice, who are you picking and why?
All right. I'm going to get in trouble for this, and I think... I am going to stick with the choice that was made. I still think Grizzabella was the right choice.
Okay, so give me the rationale. Give me your defense.
So as much as in going through the show, right, and everyone is trying to prove why they should be the one, I believe that some of these cats that are living pretty decent lives, that are doing okay for themselves, that are potentially, and some people might say arguably, enjoying themselves and enjoying mm-hmm. their lives, that she is struggling, you know, that she has been ostracized and that she needs a rebirth. I genuinely believe that she can come back and potentially, people might debate this, if there was mistakes that she made in her life, that she can now, with the knowledge that she has, be reborn and live a life that would not, that will allow her to go in a different path, that potentially would not allow her to be where she is now.
Okay.
I would say that my second choice would be Gus, but I believe that the show gives him a sympathy edit.
Yeah. That is true.
And I think we do not get a sympathy edit. I think we get a mild sympathy edit for Grizzabella. That's what I'm going to say. And I think that it is mixed in with no one likes her. And, you know, and because of what? And I think that everyone genuinely deserves a second chance. And I believe that that is the story. That is the moral of the story.
So I agree completely with 95% of what you said. But here's where we differ on that 5%.
Yeah.
I don't think she needs to be murdered, which is the way I've looked at this, is that this is a reborn, but it's a murder. I think that she is being accepted back into her family at that moment. Okay. And I want her to spend one more year with him. Like, make her amends. Spend some time with that family that has just accepted you back. Have that year. Go to some birthday parties. Have some celebrations. Like, you're now, like, everything you've been looking for, they're ready. They've embraced you again. Go next year. So you get that same redemption arc, that same story that she deserves and needs and wants and the tribe is willing to give her. I just think she's next year's choice. And I think you send up Gus this year or whoever this year.
Okay. I can totally understand that. I think I can totally understand that. Like I said, I think as you said, as I said, and you said, because Gus is one of my not so favorite cats.
Yeah.
I didn't really have it in to defend.
Yeah, you're not defending. Well, and I saw much younger Grizzabella. So I think that's why, as I was introduced to this show, I saw Grizzabellas that weren't, they've never been old by any means, but I saw 20-year-olds and, you know, in their young 20s performing. And as much as they try to make them look weathered and old and like, you know, Grizzabella-y, it still doesn't have that feeling. And I think I'm skewed because of that. Which is like, yeah, they still got some life left in them. Like, let them have another year. But yeah, I think it's, I think the, I don't ever want to see the show lose that redemption arc. So my argument's never been about that. Well, my argument was originally that it was just the X Factor on drugs, and then you're picking the best, you know, best performances. And I was like, yeah, I remember it was great. I had fun, but like I had more fun in some other songs.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. If we're doing it by number, I'm giving it to some other cats. It's going to Tugger or Skibbleshakes, and Tugger doesn't even really care. You know what I mean? Like, he's like,
for sure. My original argument was Tugger Mustafilis is going to be my my One Direction, and we're going to send them together.
That's good.
That's X Factor. That's the way X Factor does it. They take a couple solos and they put them together, and they got mega hits.
That's really good.
But yeah, no, that's been my argument. So I'm not going to try to change your mind. I will track your Grisabella vote begrudgingly into my sheet. And yeah, I mean, again, I will tell everybody in the world to go see Tommy. Who's Tommy? Because I had a blast. But how can people stay in touch with you, social media, and everything else you're doing?
Yes, you can find me on Instagram at Brett.Lockley, Brett with two T's, and Lockley, Lockley. And that's probably the best way to find me. I post pretty frequently, more on my story than on my timeline, but there'll be more stuff coming, I promise. I've just been very busy. We just opened the show on March 28th, and I made my Broadway debut just recently. So I have a lot to catch up on. But yeah, just find me there. I am an creative in general. I don't just perform. I teach, I choreograph, I do creative direction and lots of other great things. So find me there and follow the journey, because the journey is ongoing.
Yeah. We'll link everything too, and share as much as we can, and try to get everyone to see Tommy, and then everything else you're working on. So this has been super fun. Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your experience in Cats and in Tommy.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Awesome. And thanks everyone else for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the cast catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any else's podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.